Happy.
Just looking for the guy to turn blue.
What's that?
Hit it hard, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, everyone. Let's see here. We've got, what did I do with my agenda? For the record, this is the March 24, 2011 meeting of the Senate Committee on Business, Transportation, and Economic Development. We've got a list of tax credit bills, but members, I think we're going to go first. We have one bill for action today, one for sure for action. Senate Bill 384, which we heard the other day and amended. I believe, Richard, it's ready to go.
Yep. Do you want me to read it in?
Let's do it.
Do you want to...
The open work session on Senate Bill 384.
Senate Bill 384 revises the billing cycle in construction contracts from 30 days to monthly, from 30 days to monthly. Changes the statement requirement for alternative billing cycles. It allows the specification of alternative time limits for making final payments and allows the prevailing party in disputes over interest to collect reasonable attorney's fees. There was a dash one amendment that was adopted on 314, and that amendment has no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay, the chair moves Senate Bill 384 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Discussion.
Did we already move the amendments?
Last time. Is there any objections? Senate Bill 384 as amended is moved to the floor with a due pass to unanimous support. Let's see, who wants to carry? Senator Atkinson's got it. All right, we'll...
I'm actually here for this.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 384. And, Richard, you want to bring us up to speed? We've got a whole bunch of tax credit bills that we heard the other day, and...
Yeah, we had quite a few tax credit bills, and there were some questions that came up on that bill, so I asked LRO to come talk about those bills, as well as Business Oregon hadn't quite finished their testimony, so I asked them to come back and finish with the description of those questions that I was asking the agencies to fill out. So I think we can open a work session on all the tax credit bills and then bring up LRO.
So you want to open on all of them?
You can open on all, or we can do it this way and open individual ones as...
I think we're going to open them all. Someone will surprise me and move something.
Okay.
We will open a work session on Senate Bills 314, 315, 316, 317, 318, 321, 685, 686, 817, 822, and 904.
We're open.
903, excuse me. Richard? We have more. We have, I guess we can start out with Chris. Chris is going to give us some information on Senate Bill 686 and 685 and anything else. And Senator Girard, I think this is specifically to some of the concerns you raised on why are these tax credit bills.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office. And I understand there were some questions around tax credit bills in 685 and 686. And in each of these cases, they deal with insurance companies that collect, well, in the fire insurance, they collect a fire insurance premiums tax. And then that money goes to the fire marshal's office. And against those same insurance companies also file a corporate excise tax. And the amount that they collect in those premiums is a credit on the excise tax return against those assessments. So it is, each of them technically are a credit on the corporation tax returns, and that's how they get included in the tax expenditure report, and they got included in all of the tax credits in the 09 session in House Bill 2067, which put sunsets on the vast majority of the tax credits. But this is one of the unique natures about these tax credits. Generally speaking, a tax credit is used to incent some kind of behavior or something like that. And if you take the credit away, there's a revenue gain because the credit won't be used anymore. In these cases, it's a little more complicated because the insurance companies also pay a what's called a retaliatory tax. And the excise tax and the retaliatory tax kind of work in tandem so that if you raise one, you lower the other. So there's kind of a near offsetting of the two. So in looking at these two credits and in eliminating the tax credit, the revenue impact isn't just what's on the corporate excise tax return. It's the combination of the excise tax return and the retaliatory tax. So it is a credit, but it is a kind of a fund shifting kind of thing. I don't know if that answers the questions or raises more.
So if we raise one, if we eliminate one, we raise the other?
Broadly speaking, yes. Now, it isn't always a one-to-one. It's not that if you eliminate the credit, say there's a $100 credit that gets eliminated, and so the excise tax increases by $100, it's not always the case that the retaliatory tax would then decrease by $100. Sometimes it might decrease by $90 or vice versa.
It sounds like rather than a credit, this is just a functional system for treating them all equal.
I think that's a fair assessment. It is, and all of the money is general fund money. It's just kind of redirecting a little bit of the excise tax into the insurance taxes. It's an interplay between those two taxes, the insurance taxes and the corporate income tax.
Kind of strikes me it's a little bit like on the personal income tax, the standard deduction, which I think that shows up as a tax expenditure in the tax expenditure report. But in essence, it's part of the design of the system.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And the natures of tax expenditures to begin with, there isn't even the notion of a tax expenditure can be somewhat debated because it's a tax expenditure that deviated from a base tax. And there can be disagreement about what a base tax system is like. For example, the tax expenditure report includes the personal exemption credit, but just about everybody gets that credit. So it's really not to a special class of taxpayers.
To make sure we understand, what is the effect on insurance companies, both domestic and foreign? I should use the term. Everybody knows anything out of state is considered a foreign company for purposes of insurance.
I believe removing the credit would have more of an effect on domestic insurers.
Okay, so it would put Oregon insurance companies at a disadvantage.
I believe that would be part of the result.
Sarah Burdick?
Mr. Chair, as you know, I chair the Finance and Revenue Committee.
I know that.
Therefore, you would expect that I would have an understanding about this. I am completely mystified, and it really does raise the question of whether there is another way to do this aside from a tax credit. This seems very convoluted to me, and I would be interested in maybe exploring, Mr. Chair, probably not through Mr. Alanak, but seeing if there is another way that this, whatever we're accomplishing here, can be accomplished through another mechanism, or whether this is indeed the best mechanism to not place Oregon companies at a disadvantage.
Go ahead.
I believe going back to 2009 and House Bill 2067, which was the bill that put sunsets on the vast majority of the credits, all except three, that was precisely the point in including these in this list of tax credits, because they are of a little bit different flavor, but there still are some policy questions in play. And that was how it got included in this group, to my recollection.
Do other states do it in a different way?
I believe a retaliatory tax kind of system is fairly common. I don't know if there's a similar credit offhand. I would have to look into that. I don't know how the other states address these policy issues.
Yeah, I know it's common in some of the contracting provisions that if you adopt a standard that disadvantages a company in the neighboring state, there's a retaliatory provision that would charge an Oregon company if they did business in the adjoining state. So you want to look at it?
Yeah, I would maybe like to explore having somebody come forward and maybe give us a bigger picture on how this tax credit. I don't regret looking at it because I think that's what the tax credit review process is for, is to take all of these credits and look and see if that's really the best way to accomplish the policy goal.
And I don't know if we have anybody in the audience from the insurance industry or represent the industry. I don't see Mr. Powell here today.
We have no brave souls out there.
Are the insurance DCBS? All right. Any other questions of Chris? Senator George, did your questions answered?
Well, a little bit. And actually, I talked to him quite a while after the last session. So the light came on, the dim light came on a little bit brighter. But I think what the problem also
kind of like
is...
like a CFL, huh?
Yeah. Is to quantify the benefits is very difficult as well. And so, see, well, this costs us this much, but to quantify how much you actually get back in benefit, we have no way of measuring that. And so that really makes trying to evaluate these tax credits fairly difficult. Nice thing about it is we put it to a different committee and let them sort it through. But so the whole idea is that we're supposed to kind of, you know, say yes,
one
no,
idea
yes,
could
yes.
be that while we don't have a subsequent refer, well, I guess we do, we could refer it to the Finance Committee first.
Yeah, there you go. Like I said, I think it's extremely hard to evaluate if it's working and if it's a good investment for us versus one that's not. So,
oh, look here.
Oh, man.
Mr. Powell, why don't you come on down? Senator Burdick was just wondering,
yes,
on the retaliatory tax and the tax credit, if there was perhaps a different way rather than using the tax credit to deal with. And I guess part of that is, how do other states deal with this, if you're aware?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Byron, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing Liberty Mutual. Now, are we talking about both?
Yes.
Both bills. Mr. Chairman and Senator Burdick, on at least the fire insurance premium tax, the reason it has to be a credit is the tax is theoretically on the consumer, but in practice assessed against the insurer. So it becomes revenue to the insurer, and then they pass it through to the Department of Business Consumer Services. So I don't know how to get around that other than changing the law to do like you do on a guarantee association, where there's actually an assessment on each insurance policy, and that might get around it, even though I'm not sure that would work either.
So and that one is really not a retaliatory tax. That's just
Mr. Chairman, it affects the retaliatory tax. The retaliatory tax, and when you retaliate against somebody, is the best way to, I think, understand this issue. All the states agree that if you tax an Oregon domestic higher than Oregon would tax your domestic, you retaliate against them.
And say that again, John.
Let's use Oregon and California as an example.
Isn't it the other way around?
No. If California taxes an Oregon domestic higher than we tax a California domestic, we would retaliate against them and charge them the higher rate. So in the case of a state that has a 2.25% premium tax, if Oregon had a 2% premium tax, when that company sold into this state, we would retaliate and charge them 2.25% to match what they charge our domestics. So that's how the retaliatory tax, and it's involved in this issue only to the extent that under that tax policy, the tax as taxes increase in Oregon, they decrease against the foreigns under the retaliatory tax. So what happens, the more Oregon taxes them, the less you retaliate, and thus the lower the revenue that comes in from them. And the point that was made at the hearing the other day is this does affect Oregon domestics more than foreign insurers, because if you increase the tax on foreign insurers, it reduces or becomes an offset against the retaliatory nature of the taxes. So, again, if we're retaliating against a state's domestic, the higher we tax, the less retaliation there is. So that's how the retaliatory tax gets involved in this tax credit.
Mr. Chair, there are states that don't have a corporate excise tax, and yet these issues, I'm sure, transcend, you know, many states. How do other states do it? In other words, is there another mechanism? This seems very convoluted to me, and I don't think I'm alone in that. Is there another way to accomplish the same thing in a more transparent, simple manner than going through this tax credit process?
Senator Beyer, Senator Burdick, I don't know, but what I can do some research and find out if there are other states that do it differently. You know, one thing that we didn't spend much time on yesterday, insurance is either the third or fourth largest contributor to the general fund. It's behind the personal income tax, the corporate income tax, and it used to be third. Somebody told me that maybe there's something in between them now. But insurers do pay a lot in taxes. But I don't know if there is a way, given our tax structure, to avoid this, unless it is, like I said, some form of a direct assessment per policy that would then be turned over to the department monthly or whenever the premium is due. That would have a lot of administrative costs attached to
John,
it.
John, are we talking about the insurance premium tax as opposed to the corporate income tax?
Mr. Chairman, the particular tax involved is the fire insurance premium tax.
I mean, in general, it's the offsets on the insurances are taxed differently. Right, it's not a straight up corporate. I was trying to. It's been a long time since Senator had done this, but
in Oregon, we do not have an overarching premium tax.
Okay,
and so we retaliate against every state. That's why we get so much money from foreigns.
Okay, it is on the corporate tax.
And the reason for that is we used to allow domestic companies to be subject to the Oregon corporate tax, foreigns paid the premium tax.
Right.
Some of them threatened to sue Oregon, saying it violated equal taxation. Then Governor Kitzhaber, I think in his first of three terms, was concerned about us increasing the tax on domestics, primarily because almost 90% of health insurance in Oregon is written through domestics, and it would have simply added 2.25% to the premiums, and didn't want to do that. And so they went to a zero.
So that's where this goes back to that action then.
In a way, it is affected by that action. But this, again, the taxes that you're dealing with here are passed through to government agencies, in essence, both in terms of the workers' comp tax in that case, and in the case of the fire insurance premium tax. The insurers are sending that money to fund a government function. Unlike, as I tried to explain yesterday, unlike a tax credit you would get for making green widgets, and the legislature says, we want more green widgets, so we will let you have a big tax credit if you make more green widgets. For every additional green widget you make, you get a bigger tax credit. Okay, that tax credit accrues basically to the bottom line of that company at some point. Now, they still may lose money, but it accrues to their value. In this case, it's credit against something you gave away. It's not just for doing your business. It's something you give to a government agency as opposed to keep it to make more widgets. It's to get government service.
But Mr. Chair, other types of businesses pay fees to government agencies and don't get a tax credit. What I'm trying to understand is why. What is the policy reason for having this sector of companies treated differently? Other companies pay for their government agencies through fees. And why should this particular industry get a tax credit?
Mr. Chair and Senator Burdick, I'm not sure that fees are taxed, that the revenue you pay fees with for government services are taxed. I have no idea if I pay a fee to the DEQ for an annual inspection or something. I would imagine that there's some way to get to my net revenues that are taxable, that that would be a cost of doing business.
I would think so.
Yeah. And so the insurers pay a lot of assessments as well. They pay to run the Department of Business and Consumer Services, the insurance division. We are assessed based on volume and by line every annually to fund that regulatory agency. We pay in health insurance, the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool Governing Board assessment. And those are, I'm sure, deducted before you get to the bottom line. So you don't need a credit on your books. If you take in the revenue and the tax applies to you, the second person that gets the money, you've collected it, it shows up as revenue on this side. And the only way then I think to balance income and liabilities is for a credit to apply.
I think we're getting confused because we're running too many insurances in here. But I think if we just stick first to the fire marshals thing. That was a specific legislative directive to fund the fire marshal by charging the equivalent of each customer a set amount.
Mr. Chairman, the statute sets out a tax basically on fire insurance, and it's very specific. So if you just bought a policy on a barn to just cover the peril of fire, 100% of that premium is taxed at 1%. On your homeowner's policy, it's a percentage of the total, because in your homeowner's policy you have liability coverages, theft coverages, and other coverages. So it's a prorated amount of that premium based on the fire coverage that's at 1%. And so that's how the total tax is calculated. So if I'm if I'm selling insurance, when I sell you a homeowner's policy as a company, I know I've got a liability attached to that of, I think it's 1% of 40% or 60% of the premium. And I know I'm going to have to pay that over to a government agency on April 1st.
And then the question becomes, why do you need a tax credit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, because it's been income to us, and we need a way to before we pay our taxes, in order not to be taxed on the money we just turned over for this purpose, which is not our business. If we don't have a credit against that, we would pay taxes on it.
Okay. I guess, why is that? Maybe Chris could answer that. Why would you have to pay taxes on something that you turned over to run a government agency? That's the part I don't understand.
Yeah, if it is included as taxable income, I'm not sure that it would be incorporated as taxable income. Because the company would be acting as a pass-through, and then if for some reason it were included, then it could possibly be just deducted as opposed to a tax credit, and then that income would not be taxed. I would have to brush up on exactly how the fire insurance tax works to be certain about how it gets treated, how that those collections get treated on the corporate excise tax. for those purposes. So I would need to do a little research on the insurance tax piece of this to provide a better answer.
Okay, Senator Gerard?
Well, I actually had a very similar question than Senator Burdick had, and I was thinking maybe we could rectify it by statute, but then if federally it was considered taxable income, then it would be a problem. So, and that would justify the tax credit. But it seems to me, and I would have to agree with Senator Burdick, that that would be either an expense or, well, I would think it would be expensed as something you had to pay out. So that's just kind of where it just seems odd.
I think, generally speaking, at the federal level, local taxes and so forth are a cost of doing business. They're an expense. So they would, that's what the, that's my kind of default understanding is those are at
probably
are
depends
deducted.
On what the statute is requiring the payment of the
right.
The fire.
There could be other details.
If it's
there.
A collection mechanism, that would be
right.
different than
right.
if it's just a requirement of selling fire insurance that you do that.
Exactly.
It seems like it'd be an expensable item.
Sure. Sounds like we need some more research on this.
Mr. Chairman, could I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Because tomorrow's a day in our offices and the districts, perhaps one way to deal with this is since the House has already sent the equivalent of these to your joint committee, would be to send these two bills there and then require us to come back with an answer to these questions when we appear before you on that in that committee.
You mean in the tax credit committee?
Yes.
I think I'd like a little more information on it before we take action.
I would too, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The way our process is set up, we want to get as much done as we can on the
fine.
Substantive issues in the policy committees.
Okay. So any more on this? These two very confusing things. Thanks,
thank you.
John. Thank you for coming. Thank you, Chris. All right, so I'm going to leave those open, and I'm going to move to, now we have Mr. Grove and Mr. Fish from the Development Department talking about 315, 316, 317, and 321. Oh, you're talking about 321. I was just throwing them a curve. Hey, we're going, what are we doing with that one?
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Grove with the Business Development Department, joined today with Arthur Fish, the Incentives Coordinator for the department. We spoke before the committee on Monday with respect to Senate Bill 315, 316, and 317, as the Chair noted. We did not have our written responses submitted to the committee at that time. We have those for the committee now, and I believe they are being handed out. I will turn it over to Arthur Fish as he spoke in great detail about, in particular, 316 and 317, but I think you'll find that the responses outlined in the documents being passed out are reflective of Arthur's testimony. But with that, I'll turn it over to Art Fish.
Thank you, Paul. For the record, Arthur Fish, Business Oregon, Incentives Coordinator. Yeah, we weren't able to get all three done here before your hearing, but now they're here, and I hope they help. And we're here to obviously answer any more questions. And if there's more questions that weren't in the question, you know, Q&A, you know, we'll look into that. You know, I think there is more. I think Senator Burdick has mentioned with the Joint Tax Committee there might be more on jobs and stuff that could be covered in future, you know, additions to this and stuff. But this is the process going to the Joint Tax Committee, and we're happy to, you know, continue to provide you with all the input we can.
Art, were you covering all three of them?
Yeah, we covered the three, and I'll just name them just for your help here. We got the research tax credit.
Let's just stay with that one
okay.
for a minute.
All right.
I'm just reading through your response here. I know where Senator Burdick's going to go on this one. It's sort of like, okay, you say that if it would sunset, there would be a decrease in the amount of research activity. How do we know that? and what would suggest that was the case, as opposed to if Intel's doing research, why would they not continue to do research if it was the necessary for the success of their business? That's hypothetical.
Chair Beyer, Senator Burdick, members of the committee, yes, to be quite honest, that is just our best assumption, is that this tax credit is affecting some decision makers. I would venture to say that there would certainly be research that would continue in Oregon, and some of it might qualify for the federal R&D credit and use that. I think our concern is just more the margin of new potential companies and ventures down the road that might look at Oregon and compare that to potential other states, and whether those would be suffer a disadvantage of going forward in Oregon without this kind of ongoing tax credit. But you know, we don't necessarily get involved with companies' tax situations to that level of detail. There isn't a real job requirement with this, or any way to really gauge the direct activity. But we do know that it has a certain salient effect with companies, and it's one of our few tax credits that we can bring to the attention of situations like Senator Atkinson's example or scenario the other day of, say, somebody who's doing energy research. And what's the benefit? But, you know, what's the exact cause and effect here, and what's going to exactly happen if this goes away? We couldn't venture to put a number on it or really be sure.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Burdick.
One of the other things is that, you know, one of the questions we're asking is how long are we going to have to encourage this type of thing? How long are we going to have to spend taxpayer money encouraging a particular activity, and when will it become self-sustaining? This tax credit has been in, as I recall, for 22 years. Yeah. 89, right?
Senator Burdick, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I really cannot answer that question. I think that is really a policy question. I mean, some of these enterprise zone things, we can sort of look and say, hey, we're trying to do something here that, you know, maybe has a, you know, we can reach a point of success and declare mission accomplished. I don't think with enterprise zones we're quite there yet, but, you know, we can make the case that we're getting there. With this, I would say, first of all, this isn't really geared towards an actual development. This credit is on annual expenses that go into research. So it really is a very much an ongoing, you know, trying to stay competitive with other states scenario, and trying to be somewhat of an encouragement. Where you get to an end date on this or an exit strategy, I have nothing for you on that. Sorry.
And then to follow up with a question that my good colleague here raised, you know, what is the policy reason for not extending it to S corporations, to pass-through organizations?
Senator Burdick, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Yeah, I've noticed that and asked the same question myself. I'm not sure about S-Corp. There may be some ways that they get kind of able to use this because of crossover. But, I mean, generally speaking, when you talk about pass-through entities that, you know, use personal income taxes, this is most tax credits actually are in the personal income tax part of the law. And then they just provide for an extension to corporate taxpayers. This is in the corporate thing, I think, just for administrative ease and simplicity, because of its piggyback function with the federal R&D credit. And at the federal level, corporate and personal taxes are, you know, much more siloed. And research is really only, you know, corporate based. And, you know, I think the bottom line is, if you wanted to extend it to S-Corps and so forth, there would be an administrative burden to set up, you know, a sort of equivalent process for doing this, whereas now we can just kind of go off of what the federal tax return for these corporate taxpayers addresses, whereas for personal income taxpayers with an LLC or something, you'd have to invent a whole new method for having them file with this.
Mr. Chair, just one final thing. I still feel like we're lacking anybody who's actually on the ground coming in and telling us about the value to them on this tax credit.
The R&D, right?
It just seems, yeah. And, they just seem like, yeah, it's a nice thing to have in your toolbox to with your recruitment effort, but I don't see the real salience of this tax credit that's been in effect for 22 years. I don't see anybody coming forward and saying, you know, if it hadn't been for this, we would have gone to Nebraska. You know? So that's just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr?
Yeah, let me make a comment as well. I would suggest that the Intels of the world don't just have business entities in Oregon. They have them spread across multiple states and across the world. And I'm sure they take advantage of this particular tax credit in our state because it's available here. And they can just as easily move that research to another state that may have a similar tax credit or maybe not. But they do it here, and that means that the researchers and the developers that are doing that R&D work are doing it here. Those jobs are located here. And, you know, we could get rid of this, and would the world end? Would research and Intel stop? Of course not. Would it happen in Oregon? Maybe, maybe not. But by having a tax credit like this, you're more apt to have those jobs and those researchers and those developers locate in our state. And I would suggest that, for the most part, those are the kind of high-paying, high-wage jobs that we'd like to have in our state. And whether it's Intel or, you know, Solar World or Genentech or all those other companies that we spend millions of dollars to try to get to locate here, once they're here, it would be a good idea to continue to have tax policies that keep them here and keep those jobs here.
Senator Starr, I'm inclined to agree with you, but it would really be nice to have someone from industry saying that.
Before you do that, Chair Beyer, Senator
Besides Jim.
If I might, I just point to our answer with question five. It does reference what we've mentioned before, which is that, you know, with new prospects. Now, we're a development agency, and we're dealing with companies that are looking at new development. And I think a lot of this research stuff is dealing with companies that are looking at things more internal and what they're doing. When it comes to a real development opportunity, this has been something that has definitely gone on some of our offer kind of estimates and sheets as far as what companies could look into if they kept that stuff here, if they expanded that kind of activity here. It's not something that's very applicable every time we deal with a company because they're not all doing research, or does that necessarily mean a future great expense for them? But, you know, it has been something that has come up. But, you know, putting, you know, again, how that fits into their tax planning and everything, I'm afraid I can't offer you much more salience on exactly what it did.
So what we do know from your sheet is that, what do we have here? That we've had 110 companies that have used it.
That we know from, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, that we know from corporate statistics that the Department of Revenue puts out, is that, you know, there's a variety of users, and quite a number of people claim it. I don't know the amount of dollars that are actually used for the credit is a relatively small one because of the classic issue with credits exceeding tax liability, but there is that. How those relate to actual businesses we worked with. Again, it's we don't have that kind of, nobody, as far as I know, except the Department of Revenue, can share light on that, and they cannot do that legally in a public forum.
Well, they could as long as they're not disclosing specifics. Companies.
Exactly.
Yeah. More on this one?
Can I ask a question? I want to ask a question of you, Lee, and that is, what do you want us to do with these? I mean, it sounds kind of funny, but, you know, I got an idea that we want to evaluate, kind of rate them, you know, maybe top to bottom, but it's going to be a difficult thing to do.
Here's our instructions, and the instructions actually come from a gentlewoman just to the right of me here, but here's the instructions. At the end of the session, when the final revenue forecast comes out, the presiding officers and the co-chairs of Ways and Means are going to make a decision about how much the state can afford to give away, I'll use that term, of tax credits. They will then look at the recommendations that we have made and prioritize them in some way. So what they're asking us to do is look at the tax credits and make a decision, the policy. They're asking us to make the policy decision, the individual credits as they stand now, should they sunset or should they continue? If they should continue, should they be modified? And if modified, in what way? And I think different ways that we could look at that would be, we could say, okay, you ought to continue this, but maybe, like the legislature did last time with Betsy, say, we will continue this, but we will only authorize X amount in tax credits, or we could say we're looking at it and say we're going to modify it in some way to lessen the impact, or increase the impact. We have a couple of new ones on here, too.
Okay, let me follow up a little bit. You have the water transit vessel manufacturing that has never been used, okay? It's a $5,000 tax credit that's on the books that might promote, you know, the use of that someday. That's not exactly a major impact to our budget. You got the Betsy sitting here at maybe as much as $403 million. You know, a little bit of Betsy goes a long ways towards quite a few water transits.
That's one way to look at it.
And that was Senator Starr's point from the other day, is that it was his tax credit program they created. That it may have been used. It may just not have been enough to show up on the report. Could have been under $1 million and probably wouldn't show up then.
But, I mean, if we're looking for a dollar amount, it's a little bit difficult to compare apples and oranges, you know, as to the value of how much that you're giving when you have some that are just real high-ticket items and some that are smaller. So the high-ticket items, I would assume, would come under more scrutiny.
Yeah.
Whereas the low-ticket, I don't know. I don't know how you want to do it.
Well, that was the question for today, was what does the committee want to do with this and how do you want to proceed? And I assume that one thing we're going to want to do is I don't think you want to take actions on any of them today, because at least I have not had a chance to really read through this, so we're in the information gathering mode more now, and one of the questions to us and to each of you is what additional information, if any, do you need? You may not know that if you haven't had a chance to go through, because we kind of rapid-fired through the last 2 days, and how much time do you want? Senator Starr has suggested one option would be we could put out, if you will, a poll as a starting place saying, what do you think? What are your suggestions on this? So I really am a bit perplexed as to how to go forward with it.
Well, I'm perplexed how to get there as well, but let's take the first one, the film products. That's got a pretty hefty price tag. Mm-hmm. We had testimony that there's a lot of revenue that comes in from that. It can't be quantified. Have we heard anything? Well, I got 50. You know, we invested. We're going to invest $15 million between 2015 and 2017. That we're going to get $45 million back. You know, there isn't anybody to quantify the advantage of doing that.
Well, I think Mr. Porter, when he testified, gave us some information that suggested that there was a benefit. Now, we had other people.
There's people that said they individually.
And there are other people who suggested that they had a different perspective on it.
Yes. So, I'm saying that you're giving us a very difficult job.
Senator, at the end of the day, it's as we always have, you have different perspectives, and whether we like it or not, it's up to us to do something.
And Mr. Chair, I would just remind everyone here and in the audience that this is, we're trailblazers here. We've never gone through a process like this. This is our first foray into an organized review of tax expenditures. And so if people are, and I joined the perplexity caucus on this, because we are trying to figure our way through it in a very, very tough budget climate. So I just think we ought to just keep plowing forward and do the best we can to send the message from this committee about this committee's priorities on these business-oriented tax credits, where they fall on the priority list, with the understanding that not all of them are going to make it in the current form that they're in.
Senator Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have we been asked to report out an opinion or recommendation to the tax credit committee on every single one, or just the ones that
yes.
we want to move, that we think should move to that committee, and then they'll get in line for prioritization there.
Let me bifurcate that. We are being asked to report out in a memo form to the tax committee our recommendation on all of the bills that were referred to us. We have the option, the opportunity, and in fact expressed desire of the leadership that we look at these, and if they're ones we think should not be continued, that we take no action, don't forward those bills. If there are ones, as we look at it, that we think should be modified for policy reasons, we should amend the bill.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, so back to the information. If people have questions on the enterprise zones. I do, and the rural one, the numbers we're looking at is just the income tax side, or does it include the property tax?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, the companies referred to there are just the four that are in line to use the tax credit. There are four others that either haven't requested it yet or, you know, or won't request it of the governor, and they have, again, a couple more hundred jobs associated with them. And, you know, and these are companies, I won't differentiate between who's using just the property tax and who's going to use the credit as well. In the long-term program, but we have Roseburg Forest Products and Murphy Company in Douglas County. There's Columbia Processing, a branch of Tillamook Creamery in Morrow County. There's the Google data center. There is the Facebook data center under construction, and there is also the Abiterola Collins biomass generating plant, which has just started construction in Lake County. And, you know, this continues to some degree the tax credit as a matter of interest for other prospects down the road here.
Thank you. But my question was, and I want to be clear,
yeah.
the amounts of money we're talking about on the rural one, are not the property tax side, it's just,
no.
It's just the income tax
oh, yeah.
side.
The numbers, the LRO numbers are strictly income tax based.
And is that true? The electronic commerce true? Those are both the income tax side
yes.
and not the property tax
Absolutely.
Side?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is the numbers you referred to here are firms that you know now that have been certified?
Have been locally certified in the program and you know, to receive at least the 7 to 15 year property tax exemption under the special rural program.
So, Chris, would those numbers have already been included in the budget numbers, the forecast? Senator Burdick was talking earlier today that things that we know already were included in the revenue forecast. We're just talking about the going forwards, which is an unknown.
For the record, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office. If a company is already able to claim that credit for that time period, it is in the revenue forecast. It would be implicitly in there.
Okay.
There wouldn't be a special, if you go to the state economist, there wouldn't be a special line item for that per se, but anything that's already inherently in the system would be.
And the column chart that you sent, that had given us, that we've been getting at each meeting, that only speaks to projections about if it's renewed, this is what the projected impact is likely to be.
Correct.
Which could have some surprises in it, like Betsy did, if it's not capped.
Yes, there. Hopefully not, but yes.
It's just always a possibility. Keep
yes.
in mind, Senator Edwards.
Mr. Chair. Right. So, Chris, in the revenue forecast then, does that only account for the expenditure side, or does that, I mean, to the extent that something is an economic development-oriented tax credit, or to the extent that if a tax credit sunsets, a certain economic activity will cease to happen, is that accounted for in the revenue forecast?
Mr. Chair, Senator Edwards, implicitly that would be in the forecast as well. Again, there are a lot of these incentives and a lot of these activities, and they're not singularly identified per se. But you take some of these credits that are in the film and video credit that's been around for a while, and you've heard both sides of that. And so we have that level of credit that's historically been granted for the past several years, and that is a piece of the overall economic economic activity going on in the state, and that is the basis for the state economist's forecast moving forward. Does that make sense?
I think so. Follow up.
Mm-hmm.
So then on the margins, if we get rid of it, then the state economist would literally drill down to that individual tax credit and say that the potential revenue side or the economic activity side is not going to be included in the forecast?
I don't think they would drill down to that level.
Yeah.
It would be another thing to pay attention to. I mean, with all of the sunsets that are in here and some of the estimates that you've been provided, there is in the current law forecast an add back for these credits going away. It's just that direct piece, and that gets added back to the revenue forecast, and that's currently in that forecast. Within all of the risks to the forecast, it's all embedded in there. I mean, they pay attention to employment reports and any establishment that adds 10 employees throughout the state. You know, it's all kind of pieces of the puzzle, but it's not an accounting kind of exercise where every employer in the state and then they're summed up to get to the forecast.
Right.
The forecast,
right.
Revenue forecast is done on a more of a macro scale.
Right.
And the work that your office does in terms of the impact of these is more of a deductive. If you know, to the extent you know them, there's a deduction.
Right. The that's correct.
It's not exactly a one-to-one match.
No, I understand that.
Yeah,
that's why I asked the question.
Yeah, the state forecast is the starting point is a national forecast. They subscribe to a national service, and it's shared down to Oregon, and then a bunch of other factors and models that the state economist uses are employed. And then the work that we do, it takes that as the baseline, and then we work on the change, any change in state policy to that baseline forecast.
It really gets down to what's referred to in these gentlemen's businesses, the but-for.
Right.
But for this credit, it wouldn't have happened. But it's always a question, would it really happen if you didn't do this?
Right.
We heard specifically Mr. Porter on the film and video said, without this, I know that I wouldn't have gotten these productions here. Leverage wouldn't have been produced in Portland.
Which Mr. Chair, has always been, which, you know, I mean, I agree with the sentiment that we should not be giving away money. But some of these quote-unquote giveaways are investments in incenting economic activity that is a net plus to our economy. And so I've just always taken exception with the frame that we're working within, that we're going to quote-unquote allocate X number of dollars and then we can quote-unquote spend up to that cap. But, you know, those decisions are made at a higher pay grade than mine, so.
But Same pay.
They don't get any higher than yours, Chris.
The pay grade may not be very high, but the decision is yours.
But it is a dilemma. Having, you know, worked with Mr. Fish in my prior professional life on some of these, and I will tell you, having managed an enterprise zone program many years ago, but lots of the companies, small companies that I certified, I could tell you it was going to happen anyway, but they became known for the program you certified. But on the other hand, there are a lot of others, larger ones, that it would not have happened.
That's right.
Without that. And how you figure that, you know, slice and dice that is really hard to figure out.
Did you have a comment, Mr. Fish, or did you just want to shake your head?
You
look like you wanted to say
something. I
just
want to nod and congratulate you on putting that so eloquently.
I think that's to say I don't want to get in the middle of that. So, Senator Girard.
Oh, thank you, Chair Barr. Follow up on what Senator Edwards said, it seems to me like if it's really true that we invest $15 million in the film industry, but it was 45, that, you know, what you're saying, that we're trying to get rid of X number of dollars of tax credits is going to save us in the budget. The math doesn't work. It's a plus minus.
Let's be real clear here. I didn't say that. That's a decision we got to make. How do you want to deal with it?
Okay, I'm just still trying to get in the process here.
Uh-huh.
May I offer a suggestion that as a committee person, that we rate two threes, two twos, and two ones, or how many that we have, and then we just kind of consolidate the data and send it down to the next level. And if we want to change things, the R&D tax credit, for example, I don't mind constricting it a little bit, but turning it over to S-Corps.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Senator Rod, I actually looked at S-Corp, and LC told me that LLCs could be extended to LLCs, but it couldn't be extended to S-Corps. I'm not sure. I haven't spoken to him about why, but I got that email, or I got that message this morning.
Oh, interesting.
But my suggestion for us was having criteria laid out on each of the bills, but obviously what they did, have they been used, potential use, amount, and any amended changes, and consolidate, or rate and consolidate. My suggestion to the chair was that we don't send any blank lines on. So, for instance, on the R&D, I pulled the committee about maybe perhaps increasing that amount from 5 to 10, and including, at the time, LLCs and perhaps S-Corps. I think those changes should go in our memo, what we would prefer to see. And if there's blank lines on years or percentages, go on.
Senator Starr, do you have a comment? You look like you're ready.
No, I just think that Senator Atkinson's suggestion is a good one, and so I would concur with that. I think it's important. The process we're going through is the process that was created coming out of the majority of the last legislative session, and they're getting what you asked for. So.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to give another option of how we could approach this. We have agencies like Business Oregon that, in my humble opinion, have done an excellent job administering the manufacturing Betsy program, for example. We got Solar World, and we got some other, we got a lot of jobs out of that credit. So one other option we have as a committee would be to cap some of these credits and instruct the agency to really drill down at the granting process for some of these credits, if a way can be found to do that, so that we. You mentioned the enterprise zones where some companies would have gotten them anyway, would have done it anyway, and others it was a but-for thing, to figure out some system that they could, there could be some analysis at the agency level to use, to fill the cap with the people who really wouldn't have done it otherwise. That's just an option.
That's an option. Here's what I think we need to do. One, I don't think we're going to decide anything today, nor should we. We need a chance to look at this. And I think what I would like to do is come back at a point and just discuss each bill and say, should this go forward or not? Do you think there needs to be some changes into it or not? And should we consider a cap in some way? And if so, I guess we would look to staff to recommend how we might do that. If we're going to do that, and then sort of a priority, which is most important, if we can do that, and that would get us to the point where we could one, make decisions on bills, which ones need to be sunsetted, which one need to be changed. It's our normal process, and it would put us in a position where we could send the requested memo down to the tax committee.
That would, Mr. Chair, that would require Mr. Berger to create us a master list, because obviously we've got 3 days worth, correct?
Richard, do you?
Yeah, they're all on today's agenda.
There's nothing left off?
The only thing that isn't on today's agenda is the Betsy bills, which were the committee is not taking up.
That's true.
We have the list.
Is there any other pieces of information that the committee needs? Rather frustrating exercise, but kind of important. None? Gentlemen, do you have anything additional that you need to tell us?
For those in the audience who have an interest in this, Mr. Craven, if you can provide us some any additional information on what, you know, the impact would aid us in making a priority decision, it would be most helpful. So with that, we've still got to do that one. I'm going to close the...
You don't have to close.
I don't have to?
Have you already opened that
one? I opened that one. Oh, okay. So specifically, Senate Bill 321.
Just for the record,
thank you, gentlemen.
We got a letter in support from Oregon Thrives to be put into the record for House Bill 21, the Farm Worker Housing Tax Credit. It was from Patty Whitney Wise on behalf of Oregon Thrives.
All righty. So is there anything else? So we will close the work session on all of those listed bills, Carolyn, put them in the record. And is there anything additional to come before the committee today? There's none. We are adjourned.